Hello, my name's Mary Mack. I'm the Executive Director of ACEDS, and I want to welcome you to this edition of TAR Talk. We have our virtual porch, we are in our rockers, and we have John Tredenick and Tom Griggs returning to our virtual porch. And John, what are you drinking on your virtual porch today?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mary. It's a beautiful day here in New Hampshire, and I'm drinking a Red Hook craft beer, which I'm told is the best craft beer in New Hampshire. Tom, what are you drinking today?
Just a quick observation. If you're in New Hampshire, you've had more than one, number one. Number two, I have decided today, because this whole topic that we're going to talk about kind of aggravates me. So I've decided I'm not going to drink anything so that I am speaking with a clear head and can get this all out onto the table. So today it's just a little bit of water.
Well, I knew you were riled up, so I was having your, I'm having your drink. What do you got going, Mary? You're going to need something here to get through this to 15 or 20 minutes.
I'm actually going to pop open one of your Red Hooks. That's what they do on the trains between Portland and Seattle, and I'm in Portland, and that Red Hook sounds really good. So I'm going to share with you, John.
Well, there you go. I want to just give a shout out and a thanks to Mary and all our great friends at ACEDS. What a wonderful organization. Thank you for sharing your virtual porch. Hey, today we're going to hit a bit of a technical subject. Our focus today is on a decision, and in particular the declarations around it from a recent Tar Wars battle in the domestic airline travel antitrust litigation. And the question will be: is backing up the truck still a legitimate strategy? More on that coming. But I'm going to kick us off before Tom really moves it from an 11 to a 15 by just giving you some background on this case. This is a recent decision by from the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, Judge Colleen Kohler-Codley, if I'm pronouncing that right. It's a multi-district class action involving the airline industry, of course. And the parties had set a discovery schedule with a deadline of January 31, 2019. Toward the end of August, the plaintiffs moved for an extension of the discovery deadline. And surprisingly here, it's the defendants who opposed this extension, saying we ought to be ready to move to trial. The court did grant the extension, but the argument and the back and forth is really interesting, particularly for TAR people. The argument was based, and I'll just summarize it here, Tom can add to it, but the argument was based on United's core document production. In this case, United produced 3.5 million documents, but, at least by allegations, due to their TAR process, only 17% of these documents were relevant. That's about 600,000 out of 3.5 million. And the plaintiffs called it a deficient TAR process and said that, in essence, they were being forced to review substantial numbers of non-relevant documents. Again, only 17% were relevant. That meant just under 3 million were irrelevant. And they complained, saying they would need more time. And there was a suggestion that the defense couldn't fix this without starting TAR from scratch. And the question I had in reading it was whether in the age-old tradition of new wine and old bottles, whether the defendants were just doing what they used to do back when I did paper discovery, and that's called backing up the trucks. And for those of you new to the game, this is where the plaintiffs ask for the good stuff. The defendants know they have to produce the good stuff, but if they can bury that stuff in thousands and thousands of boxes and essentially back up the trucks, maybe they'll miss the good stuff. So are they doing that with TAR today, Tom? What's your thought on this opinion? and whether I'm right about backing up the trucks.
You know, John, it's an interesting concept. Maybe that's what's happening, but it takes me back to a conversation I had with a lawyer a bunch of years ago. A guy told me that he didn't want to use TAR because he didn't want to find the best documents. He actually wanted to overload the other side with a bunch of documents that, and they'd never find anything. And I said, look, if it's me, and this is what's going to come out today, if it's me, give me all those documents. I will use TAR. I'll use a good TAR tool, and I will find them and find them fairly quickly, pull them up to the top, and then I'll go to the judge, and I'm going to complain that I got a document dump. It's at that point in time. I look at this. I take all of the lawyers at their word, and I can tell you, in my view, this isn't a document dump, right? This is, the plaintiffs have kind of suggested it. There have been others who commented on this who have suggested it's a document dump. I don't think it is at all. On the other hand, there's been some suggestion that, oh, this was just really a reasonable production. Nah, not kind of the way these guys had their production protocols set up. Wasn't really. Might have been a reasonable TAR result, John. We've seen these, right? We're talking about the recall precision trade-off. Right? In this case, 97% recall, 17% precision, not unheard of, right?
Absolutely. So what do you think was going on here, Tom? Give us your insider scoop. You're the TAR expert.
Well, as you know, from our discussions, I have read just about every single pleading and piece of paper that was filed relating to this because I really wanted to know what happened. And in this case, I don't think it's a document dump. I really think from what I'm seeing, Jonathan Moss, I read a comment by Jonathan Moss, and he said, it's human error, plain and simple. Now, I think he kind of had a different perspective than I do, but I agree with him. This was human error. That's what it was. What happened in this case was the defendants who were using the TAR tool said, okay, we're going to get to 85% recall. We can do that. We think it's going to work. We think our precision will be okay. We're going to get to 85% recall. So they set the floor at 85% recall, but somehow due to a software problem, some synchronization issue in the tool that they were using, that 85% got flipped to 90%. So instead of producing at 85%, the tool was looking to 90%. Then when they go to get that production, that 90% plus, somebody misread the precision figures. They missed it. They read it wrong. So what they thought was that they had produced at an 85% recall floor, and when they read the precision, it was 58%. Ultimately, it was actually 97% recall and 17% precision. You know, oops, it happens. It was just, in my view, it was just a screw-up. No training problem, no monitoring problem, just a screw-up.
Let me jump in on that one. Hello?
John, I was just going to say that it sounds like a big, quick peek to me.
Well, there you go. Quick peek in the sense that the defendants really didn't bother to look at all those documents, sent them over. But how do you mean that, Mary?
Right. That's exactly. I mean, that they ran a tool, they got the recall, and they weren't necessarily checking for precision, and so they just sent it all over. Now I haven't read any of the pleadings, but I think that's the effect of it. The effect would be that the other side gets the big document dump, and it's on them to go combing through it.
Well, that certainly was one of the big issues underlying the debate. And we had Maura Grossman weighing in. We had David Lewis, perhaps another. But the argument was, who bears the burden in a production to separate the wheat from the chaff? The plaintiffs were arguing that the defendants should bear that burden. They're asking for relevant documents, relevant to the subject matter or discoverable. Not our point today, but they were asking for the good stuff is what they're asking for and saying, yeah, maybe that good stuff was in there, but they were going to spend a fortune, which was the essence of their extension. A funny issue, but we're going to hit that in a minute. I wanted to make sure our listeners focused in on the numbers about precision and recall. So Tom started out and we talked about 85% was the recall, but the precision was about 58%. I think I've got those numbers right. And what that means is that you're going to see a relevant document just about every other document. Have I got that right, Tom?
As a general matter, yeah, it's a little bit better than that, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it means. So a precision of 50, 60% is good. What happened was that the precision by mistake dropped to 17%, means you're now looking at about four documents for everyone, four and a half or something, at 17%. So one of their arguments was there was no way the group was going to get this finished. And we thought that was a bit funny, putting aside the core issue. But the main issue is who bears this burden? That's what backing up the trucks was all about.
And John, when you look at this, it's actually it's an interesting situation when we talk about who bears the burden. Obviously, the defendants actually have to make the production. They had an agreement. They kind of blew it. They produced too many documents in terms of precision. So they kind of blew that. But there was a quasi understanding, from what I can tell, that the defendants were not going to actually review anything that came out of their charge. They had pretty much said that. There was no real argument. So when they thought they had produced at 85% recall and 58% precision, they thought they were doing okay. They didn't have to look at any more documents because that was kind of the understanding. They just kind of missed it on that and ended up producing at different recall precision rates. So as you said, the question then becomes, how do you fix it, right? And who's got to
yep.
fix it? And I didn't focus on who, right? You know me. I looked at TAR and I said, if I was going to get this set at Catalyst with what we do, if I was going to get 3.5 million documents with roughly 600,000 responsive documents, what would I do and what would it take to actually put the plaintiffs where they needed to be? In other words, you gave me the document,
right.
I knew what's responsive, right? So
yep.
well, that's the question. How do we get the responsive set?
Well,
and,
exactly
you know,
right. Because, well, they claim that United have to do the production again, and United said, gosh, we'd have to start from the beginning. I think they were using TAR 1, by the way, and there was a lot of talk about basing their statistics on control sets, which seems to me to be inherently shaky, even in the best of circumstances. But what do you do about that if you're the plaintiff?
Well, if you're the plaintiff in this one, if it was me, first thing I do is grab those documents and start using them in a good TAR tool and actually running it. Yeah, United could have done it too. All right. In my view, it doesn't matter who uses the right TAR tool. You are absolutely right. They knew when they went in, everyone knew that this was going to be a TAR 1 approach. Continuous active learning, Cal, TAR 2, much better at finding documents much more quickly. So what do I do? Regardless of who's doing it, the first thing I do is I put it into a Cal tool, right? It's not about
yep.
finding that 2.9 million documents that you've got to get rid of. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to find those 600,000 documents or some set of that. So, you know, if you look at, for example, Morris studies, and you know this, you kind of suggested this. Morris studies suggest that average precision on a TAR, on a Cal review, is 50%. So you look at one document that's not responsive for every responsive you find. I said, let's be conservative here. Let's see what it would take if it didn't work that well. Let's figure we look at two to find one, which is a 33% precision, right? How long is that going to take? I'm not going to walk everybody through the math. But what I would tell you is I have a protocol that we actually studied. Dr. Pickens and I and Andrew Bai studied to try to actually make CalTools extraordinarily efficient. And what we talked about is going through the document set and making responsiveness-only judgments to find the responsive documents. That would put plaintiffs where they need to be, right? Because they'd know what's responsive. So what I did was I did a quick calculation. I mean, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 600,000 documents. I personally have seen people get 250 documents an hour doing these responsiveness reviews, right? In this case, the defendant suggested three docs every minute. That's that's 180 docs in an hour. There's some discussion back and forth about whether that's really doable or not. I have actually found in a litigation review 250 documents an hour. If you do that, just a responsiveness decision, blow through it, it's going to take you somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,000 review hours to find 85% of the documents, which is what they asked for. They had the plaintiffs had said they had a review team of 70 review hours. If they're working 10 days a week, John, that takes less than 10 business days. 10 business days to blow through that at 33% review precision, certainly 250 docs an hour. If it's more than that, you know, if it takes longer than that, people take longer to review, sure, maybe we're talking about instead of 2 weeks, maybe it's 5 weeks. So that's how we get there.
Yeah, let me note that one of the declarations, the United talked about three documents a minute, which becomes 180 docs an hour. Now, we can have debates about review time, but I absolutely agree with you. If all the reviewer is doing is looking at responses, they can go through it much more quickly than if you're trying to tag issues or analyze things. It's just in or out. I think what hung United was this. I think they were hung by using a PAR 1.0 system. And I'm not going to say who they were using, but they're well known. Here's the reason. They've gone through and they have done a cutoff and ended up with their 3.5 million documents. 600,000 of them by estimate are likely relevant and the rest aren't. Now, if we send it back and say that's not good enough, they don't really have an easy method to narrow it down because in essence, they don't know which ones are relevant or irrelevant even in the 3.5 million. So they'd have to start a new TAR process, a new TAR 1.0 and shoot for lower recall and hopefully better precision, because there is a trade-off. In our world, though, if I were plaintiff's counsel, I'd simply say, ship them on over, and I'd start a Cal review right from the top. I would start pulling in relevant documents, and as we've shown and others have shown, it very quickly learns what you're looking for and brings those relevant documents in. So we wouldn't much care if we got 3.5 million documents, because we would have had the same kind of results. We might not even need to find all the 600,000. We'd be looking for the hot documents. But if you did, you'd be talking about reviewing the 600,000 plus the overlap. At 50% precision, you'd be looking at 1.2 million. So in essence, it's like they produce the relevant documents if you have a Cal, a TAR 2.0 TAR process, but that's all you're going to ever look at. Am I right?
You're absolutely right about that, John. And when we look at this collection that was given to the plaintiffs, when they say precision was 17%, what they're essentially saying is collection richness is 17%. We'd love to get a collection that's 17%, right? I mean, if we're getting collections that are down around 1%, yeah, those are tough. 17%, I'll find those 600,000 documents for you. Absolutely. Just like you said, run it through a Cal system, get it blown out the door, find the responsive documents, and move on. Yeah, there's a little bit of time involved, but it's not the 6 months that this discovery process was extended.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me close out this talk. It's been a lot of fun by kind of trying to summarize, and I'll give you the last word as well, Tom. But we've got this case, the big league case. It's been going for 5 years, the antitrust litigation against the domestic airlines. There's a production to be made, and the defendants produce on time. But their production is pretty lame. It's a very low richness. It's a lot like backing up the trucks. I think the difference here is that if the plaintiffs had access to a good modern car engine, a Cal engine, they wouldn't really care because they would load these documents in. They already know what they're looking for. They've got their seed documents. They'd fire them in and start bringing them back, and at least they'd be looking at the most important stuff. So at the least, you've got an antidote to backing up the trucks. I'm not saying it works in every case, and I've talked to some of the participants, and in this one, as an antitrust case, there are a lot of documents that are important, maybe when things were sent, timeframes and the like, that might not be obvious to a TAR engine. Maybe they need to look at all 600, but I've got to believe that they could effectively handle this problem on their own. And yet that doesn't hit the biggest issue, which is who's got that duty? The defendant, clearly the defendant cannot just produce 50 billion documents and say it must be in there somewhere. Who's got the duty? And I think the duty is to use a decent TAR engine. What do you think about that, Tom?
John, I agree with you on that. I mean, this was a solvable problem, a problem that would not really justify taking 6 months of time, in my view. I've seen a lot of people commenting on this. They say this is spun out of control. It's unbelievable what happened here. No, this was a TAR review. It really wasn't a bad TAR result, okay? It was an okay TAR result. It just happened that they messed up. And we could have put the plaintiffs back to where they wanted to be, even maybe a little bit ahead, in a period of maybe a month. In a month. Not 6 months. In a month, and they'd have been ready to roll. So I think, you know, I don't care. I'd just jump in, start looking at the documents, and put an arrow in my quiver that says, look what these guys just did to me. They gave me all this junk, but I got it done. So that's the way I end up jumping on these things, to be honest with you.
So frankly, the plaintiffs won their motion. They got their extension. Maybe we'd call it a Pyrrhic victory. And those wordsmiths among us know Pyrrhic is a victory at great cost because they're stuck looking at the 3.5 million documents. And I know that the plaintiffs felt like they shouldn't be stuck and this should be a much more narrow production. But they did win and they gave us a chance to take a look at a very interesting TAR issue that ties into precision and recall. So I want to thank you. Thank you for Tom. And thank Mary and our friends at ACIDS for another TAR Talk. And we had a lot of fun talking about this case and precision and recall. We'll look forward to the next TAR Talk. Thank you.
Looking forward to our next TAR Talk with our friends John and Tom.
Thank you, Mary. See you on that porch soon.